On this edition of Locked On Grizzlies, I am thrilled to be joined by the man who covers the Grizzlies for the Memphis Flyer, Kevin Leip, at Flyer Grizz Blog. He joins me today on this edition of Locked On Grizzlies.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the second edition of Locked On Grizzlies right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Peter Edmiston. You could follow me on Twitter at Peter Edmiston. You could read me at the Commercial Appeal as a contributor. You can listen to me, if you happen to be in the Memphis area, every morning on Sports 56 WHBQ and 87.7 FM. Wallo and Peter in the morning or on the app, really, anywhere in the country. So if you want to listen in, feel free to do that. That'd be great. Thanks for joining me here on episode number 2. We've got a good one for you, Kevin Leip of the Memphis Flyer, coming up momentarily. Want to give you a quick recap of day one of training camp before we got into the interview with Kevin. And I'll let you hear from David Fizdale, head coach of the Grizzlies, on a couple of things before we do that. The big thing coming out of media day on Monday was the overall optimism about Marc Gasol and Mike Conley and their health, and some concern about Chandler Parsons. And so that was kind of storyline number one going into practice. First of all, I'll just let you hear from David Fizdale himself on how he felt things went day one of practice.
Good practice. I mean, like I said before, we're in great shape. So I didn't have to deal with anybody breaking down or anything like that, or guys having to come out of drills, or me having to sub more than I wanted to. Guys were really working today, and it was ugly in some stretches because they aren't connected yet. But we'll keep working at it day to day.
As he mentioned, things got a little ugly. That's kind of, I think, how any coach would tell you first year, second year, 10th year, 20th year. It's never particularly smooth on day one. You've got to work out some of the kinks. But the energy level continues to be high. The intensity level, the excitement level, all those things that you like, the intangibles, all that stuff is good. That usually is good at this time, but the Grizzlies have had a couple of seasons now where training camp hasn't necessarily had that feel. Even early on, it didn't have that kind of competitive feel, and there were some issues. So I think the optimism is properly placed at this point. I think optimism is also properly placed with regard to Marc Gasol. And David Fizdale talked a little bit about what Mark could do in practice, and he was also asked a little bit about some of the other injured guys. You'll hear Rob Fisher, my colleague over at Sports 56 and part of the Grizzlies broadcast team, asking about the injured guys. He's referring to Chandler Parsons, Deontay Davis, as well as Jordan Adams when he asks this question. So when you hear that, you won't hear them by name, but that's who he's talking about. But when the first thing you'll hear is David Fizdale talking about Marc Gasol and his involvement in practice.
He was in all the way through 2 hours of practice. He never missed a rep. He was a great leader today in helping young guys and fast-tracking young guys. So I think you guys are going to be really happy with what you see out of Mark.
Were the guys on the bike able to do much, if anything?
Not much. They did the non-contact stuff, and then we just had them condition while other guys are going.
So he went the full 2 hours, all the reps, didn't miss anything. That doesn't mean that that's going to be the case all year. It doesn't mean that that's going to continue to be the case. You know, they have to be very judicious with Mark. He knows that. They know that. There's a lot riding on Marc Gasol, for sure. But good start. A little concerning. Again, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and you'll hear Kevin Leip and I talk about it momentarily. A little concern about Chandler Parsons, Deontay Davis, but Parsons in particular because of his importance to the team. So he's still a long way, and I would imagine, I don't know, right now you got to think of it's probably a coin flip about whether he's going to be part of things come opening night. That could change based on his recovery, but as it stands right now, that's probably the best that that we can guess. I got to tell you one quick thing, and I could make up some kind of thing. I could pull a Trump and say I had a defective mic, but the truth is that even though I've been doing radio for well over a decade, and you would think that this sort of thing wouldn't happen. Somehow or another, I managed to do this interview with Kevin Leip without actually properly turning on my mic or his mic, which were really going to be the same mic, but we ended up doing it sort of using my phone's internal mic. So when you hear the interview, you'll know it's definitely fine to listen to. It's not the quality I would preferred, and it's not what I was intending, but you know, stuff happens, right? So the fact that I can't properly work a mic, I think I got that little kink out of the way. I think we're good to go from here on out for my next set of interviews. I feel good about it. I have turned on this mic, so right there, I'm ahead of the game. But so when you hear the interview and you notice the sound is a little bit off, that's why. My apologies. Now, don't let that detract from Leip's great stuff. There's really good insight and a lot of fun stuff coming up for you over the next few minutes of this interview, but just bear that in mind.
I am frankly honored to be joined by the man who has covered the Grizzlies. Kevin, how long have you now been the man running the Grizz blog for the Flyer?
I took over for the Flyer in the 2014 season.
So this is season number 3 in full as the head honcho.
Yeah, this is season number 3 as the head honcho at the Flyer. And before that, I was with SB Nation for 2 years. So I think this is my 5th season, maybe my 6th.
That, by the way, is the mellifluous voice of none other than Kevin Leip. You can follow him, and you should. And certainly if you're a Grizzly fan, I have to ask you a question. Why the hell aren't you? But if you're not, then you should follow him at Flyer Grizz blog on your Twitter feed, and of course Beyond the Arc. You can bookmark that on your web browser, which I think is a great way to look at the web personally. That's that's how I like to do it.
That's right.
So after having spoken to everyone this week about, you know, what's coming up, training camp is going on, what is your general feel for the team? Did talking change anything about your expectation? I mean, you've written this week preview pieces, but did talking change anything about what you think?
Not really. I am kind of taken aback by just the vibe. It seems like there's a real kind of spirit of camaraderie that I wasn't necessarily expecting. I mean, I think especially last year, even from media day, I think things were a little tense, a little strained. Guys came in feeling some sort of pressure, and I think that came across in their interviews and stuff. And obviously, they got off to a terrible start, and then things got worse. So, I think there's definitely a more positive vibe this year. I think it's noticeable. Whether that'll translate onto the court or not, I don't know. It doesn't really change my kind of expectations for how the team will perform. I think they're probably still going to win 48 games, somewhere in there. That's a little bit of an optimistic projection because, you know, health is such a variable. But nothing I've heard yet has changed anything about what I think is going to happen.
So, like, do you buy that Marc Gasol, as he has said, and he went to great pains on Monday, media day, to talk about his health, his condition, he's better than ever. Do you buy it?
I didn't want to buy it, you know, but I think just his body language, he is so transparent. He really is just a guy who's incapable of saying one thing and thinking another and not having that show on his face and just kind of in the way he carries himself. I think we've seen that, especially on the court. I mean, think about how after the Jeff Green trade, right, his body language just completely changed, his demeanor completely changed. He really seems mentally... Just different. He seems a little bit more relaxed, and I have to think that if he were stressed out about kind of what was going on with his injury, his rehab, I think we would have seen a little bit different body language, a different feel, saying different things for him. I kind of want to take him at his word.
I think, you know, I kind of have a theory that maybe it's like his body over the course of the last few seasons has accumulated so many little injuries, knocks, big injuries, but just he's always banged up. I mean, you're here every game just like I am. You know, he's always got foot in the ice bath. He's always got stuff wrapped. He's always Is it possible that the fact that he had to withhold himself for 6+ months from basically any activity, and certainly a lot of strenuous activity, could that have healed up the rest of his body so that he does feel better?
I certainly think it's possible. I mean, the summer after he signed, so last summer, right, they told him to take the summer off, and he did, and he came in out of shape. And he's come in out of shape before. I think 2 years before that, he came in out of shape after playing in Eurobasket. Just looked terrible. And I really think that when he comes in like that and is not really ready to, doesn't have that conditioning base, he looks kind of trim the way he looked coming into his contract year 2 years ago. And that's, you know, obviously his contract years are the years where he comes in the best shape. But I think there's a lot of truth that he just, if he comes in without that conditioning base and comes in a little bit out of shape, he is not a guy who can play his way into any sort of stamina. It just tears him apart as the year goes on. So I think kind of having to sit out of the Olympics, and he was trying like hell to come back for the Olympics and didn't make it. And I think that's the best news I've heard as a Grizzlies fan, right? You don't want him to play the Olympics this summer. That would have been crazy. He is crazy. We know that about him. I think having that time off and really also just the having to think about, like, what if I'm never right again? You know, that kind of existential experience of having to sit down, I think that's going to be good for him. I don't think you're going to ever see him play through an abdominal tear again. You know what I mean? Like, I think with any luck, it's changed his approach to that.
I asked him, you know, straight up, did this change the way he approached his body? And he said that he had been selfish for the last few seasons, that he wanted to win and that he wanted to be out there and that he didn't listen to himself. And he says that, you know, he'd like to think that he would change. And he said, I guess I'd sign a contract right now if I could, but I can't. I don't know, man, because, you know, you talk to the guy a lot. I've talked to the guy tons. And, you know, this is the guy that scored 38 points in a game and bitched about the game and being bad basketball and said he didn't like the style. I mean, this is a guy that has a very strong commitment to doing whatever he thinks he needs to do or he should be doing or the right way to do this, that, or the other. If he thinks that he's healthy and the trainers don't think he's healthy and his foot is not where it needs to be on their scans or whatever, and they say, man, you got to sit down. When push comes to shove, let's say the Grizzlies have lost 2 or 3 straight, like they need a big win, whatever it is he actually going to sit?
I think what makes the Grizzlies roster a little bit difficult for a coach is not Zach Randolph and Tony Allen, it's Marc Gasol, right? I mean, he like you said, he's so headstrong. He's going to do what he's going to do. I think the experience of trying to just push through that one more game, And he even said, you can tell it's still in his mind. I remember now when you talked to him, he said, you know, I thought I could just push through because I had the All-Star break. I thought I could just deal with it then, and it would be fine if I just pushed through one more time, and it wasn't. You know, I think that had to have been a wake-up call for him. We'll see what happens, but hopefully he has enough people around him, and even the other guys on the team. You know, I know Zach's not afraid to speak his mind to Mark. Zach's going to say, hey, man, what are you doing? Right, I would hope so. Anyway, I gotta think that it kind of put the fear into him a little bit.
So now this team approaches this season, and you've written about it. You said, I think your quote was something to the effect of, you know, grit and grind is not dead; it's done. What is that distinction?
I mean, dead means that it's been killed, right? Done means that it's time to do something else. And I think that the culture that kind of was instilled, frankly, by Lionel Hollins taking over, by signing Zach Randolph, those moves that were made in 2009, 2010, I think that's just run its course, right? There's a continuity from that all the way through the Dave Yeager era, and basically playing the same style of basketball, basically running the same sets, most of the same guys. I think it's just time to do something else. The league has caught up. And it's not even so much that the league has caught up as the league has evolved and the guys involved have gotten older. And so they're not able to necessarily do the same things that they were. You're not going to see Zach Randolph average 20-10 anymore. You're just not. I mean, unless unless there's like flubber involved or something like that. You know,
don't tell Zach that, by the way.
No, I'm not going to tell Zach that because he would do it, and then he would beat me up. But you know, it's just time. It's time for a change, right? And I mean, even as the team and the players have obviously been coached to use the word grind and grit and grind as much as they can to that's this kind of identity for this team. I think it's just I hope that Coach Fizdale is not going to be beholden to post isolation basketball, right? I hope that he has some better ideas than that, because frankly we haven't had any ideas like that in this building to watch for a long time, and I don't think Jaeger had him either, honestly. Or if he did, the players weren't going to do it. So,
well, that's the thing. In talking to Tony Allen about this, you know, he more or less said, you know, Dave Jaeger didn't necessarily involve him really, and he kind of, and you know, Tony and Dave Jaeger had their issues, and he was sort of on the outside from the very beginning. He tried to bench Tony and Zach, which, again, you know, may have been the right move, actually, but it wasn't done the right way. I mean, it was, you know, you could argue that is possible if you have a better alternative, that would be okay to bench those guys.
Yeah, Jeff Green's not that alternative.
Well, yeah, and then you, from your lips to God's ears, because that's exactly right. But there was no alternative, and there was no communication. So I think that the improvement seems to be, David Fizdale seems to be a better communicator, even right out of the gate with these guys. But, you know, if there is an absence of grit and grind, we all know nature abhors a vacuum, something moves in. What is that something? If there's not grit and grind, but you've got more or less the same personnel, at least from the starting unit, with the exception of Chandler Parsons, who may or may not be ready for the season, based on the very vague Chris Wallace comments, we can get to it some other time. What is that? If it's not that, what is it?
Well, I think Fizdale kind of alluded to it in some of the stuff he was saying. You know, he mentioned specifically that he's borrowing a lot of defensive principles from Spoelstra and Riley, from that Miami kind of defensive system. And on offense, you know, he name-checked other coaches. He mentioned Rick Carlisle, he mentioned Terry Stotts, and he mentioned Spoelstra again. You know, those are teams that are, I'd say, offensively very, obviously they're pick-and-roll based. They're kind of, they play a lot of four-out basketball, that kind of thing. And the Grizzlies really, if you look at some of the younger forwards they have, your Jamichael Green can hit corner threes. Jarrell Martin can probably do okay. He's got an okay jumper, you know. But obviously, I think his development is we don't really know what he's going to be yet. But, you know, they have, and Brandon Wright obviously gives them a pick-and-roll score when he's healthy, when or if he's healthy. You know, I think they have the pieces to kind of plug in. And it's going to take Zach Randolph maybe not playing as much. It's going to take Tony Allen probably not playing as much or being used differently, especially on offense. He's got to cut to the basket. That's like the only thing he's good at. And, you know, I think it's going to be a change of perspective. It's going to be a little bit more open. I think all these coaches that he's mentioned, that's kind of a faster game. It's a more fluid game. It's a more motion-based game. I think that's where it's headed.
Now, you know, I think you're right. I think it has to be that. And I think if you're running four out, if Marc Gasol is hitting threes, then maybe Marc Gasol is the guy. He's not. It's not like Marc's a spectacular rebounder, so I don't think you lose that much by putting right. him outside. I think that's probably a reasonable guess as to what might be one of the tweaks that we see right out of the gate. Chandler Parsons, whether he's in or out, will make a huge difference, too, as far as what they can do, because visibility to shoot, playmake, and that sort of thing from the third three spot. But on the defensive side, Kevin, you know that those teams, like Spoelstra teams, they are blitzing out on that pick and roll. They're very aggressive with the bigs. Same thing with Carlisle, who switches up pick and roll coverages quite a bit. Terry Stotts, I mean, he always has pretty athletic bigs that can go and do that. This is not a – I can't see Zach lasting. I mean, he did it some, and he was very proud of himself for doing it. But I can't see that lasting for very long. Now with Deontay Davis or Jarrell Martin, absolutely. You know, Jamichael Green, no question. But Mark – and Zach, who I guess are still planning on playing 25 or 30 minutes a game, I don't think they can handle pick-and-roll coverages the way that we've seen those teams, at least over the last few years.
No, I don't think so either. And I think that's going to be what gets Zach Randolph his reduced minutes load. I definitely don't think he'll be playing 30 minutes a game by the end of the year. I just don't see it. I think he's going to be, yeah, almost like a like that Charles 1996 Charles Barkley, like garbage man, just get rebounds and score on putbacks. He's great at that. Like, he's preternaturally gifted at that, right? So if you can, you can, you have to convince him that that's his role, and I think that's going to be a challenge, right? But yeah, I think defensively, you know, you mentioned those younger guys, and I think that's going to be the key is some of these younger guys, Jarrell Martin, Jamichael Green, Deontay Davis, they're going to have to step up and they're going to have to figure out how to play defense. You know, that was Jamichael Green, his foul per minute rate last season was like Hamed Haddadi levels of foul per minute, right? Fewer cigarettes, more, same fouls per minute. Man, I wonder what that guy's up to.
Oh, but love him, man.
But yeah, I think you hit it on the head. It's going to be those younger bigs are going to have to figure out how to do some of these pick and roll coverages, because that's always been the way to destroy the Grizzlies is spread pick and roll. They got
crushed.
They got demolished. The entire first half of last season, every time they played a team that had any sort of like pick and roll set that stretched that interior out, they lost by 30 points because they got down 15 and realized we're never going to score enough to catch up, and they stopped playing, right? If we see that early on this year, it's going to be trouble, and you know, I don't know what they're going to do then, but I think it's going to require those young bigs.
I talked to David Fisdell about that and asked him about, like, could there be two different units, like a first unit that has one style and a second unit that has a completely different style, and he said he wants to just coach one team. He doesn't want to necessarily do that. I think that's an ideal thing to hope for, but I'm not sure that in execution you can have a team with Wade Baldwin, Troy Daniels, let's say Chandler Parsons stays out there, and Deontay Davis, and you know, whoever else is going to be, James Ennis, let's say. That team can't play like Mark, Mike, Tony, and Zach. That just can't, and if they are, then one of those two teams is not playing at their ideal, you know, level for whatever reason. So can he avoid having like a Hubie Brown style, you know, 10-man rotation where you got five and five, and or will there be a mesh between those two teams?
Well, the rotation is going to be really interesting, right? Because I mean, for the last 3 years, we saw it was play the starters for the first quarter, bring in the bench for 8 minutes, put the starters back in for the last 4 minutes of the second quarter, play the starters for as long as you can in the third quarter, even if you're down by 30.
Maybe even into the fourth.
Do not sit the starters in the third quarter. Dave Yeager just won't do it. You know, I don't know. You know, I think ideally, stylistically, you want to think that your ability to use the athleticism of your young guys can be brought along with these older guys, right? And I don't think that's going to happen if Mike, Mark, Tony, and Zach are playing together. You know, I really don't. I think what you're going to see, and ideally what he's going to have to do, is stagger his substitution so that there's, you know, maybe those guys are your starters, but then there's always just three starters on the floor, or two starters on the floor. You know, and just kind of a Popovich thing, and just mix and match your five-man units. Don't do these hockey line changes, because there's no way, like you said, there's no way to do that and kind of reconcile these ways that he wants to play.
Yeah, I think we'll learn the way he wants to play pretty quickly too. Mike Conley, how important is his health to the season? I mean, I just see with Wade Baldwin and Andrew Harrison, I like Wade Baldwin.
Tony Roten.
Oh my God, Tony Roten. That's right, I forgot about Tony. Who, you know, if you remember, Wade Baldwin confirmed he did play NBA 2K13, I believe, and score 78 points with Tony Roten as the Grizzlies. So there is that to get excited about. Although Baldwin said it would be weird if he brought it up to Tony, so he hasn't told him about it yet. So sorry if I'm revealing anything on this podcast that I shouldn't. My apologies. But if you take Mike Conley out of the mix, Kevin Leip, what happens?
I start live tweeting quotes from Lamentations and Ecclesiastes during basketball games like I did at the end of last season after Mario Chalmers went down, right? There's no substitute for Mike Conley on this team. We're right back to the days of the Grizzlies not having a backup point guard. You know, I really like Roten. Honestly, I really, Lionel Hollins won't play young guys, and I thought he really did himself a disservice by not allowing Tony Roten to kind of develop and find his gifts. I think Philadelphia was probably the worst place he could have landed, because he's going to try to score 94 points a night. And he was apparently given free reign to do that.
What do they care?
You know, but But I don't know that he's going to make it out of camp, right? Because you've got Baldwin, you've got Andrew Harrison. You know, they like Harrison and how he's developed. I don't know that they like it so much they're ready to hand the keys to him if Conley goes down.
I don't think they should.
And Baldwin's a rookie. Baldwin doesn't even have the year of D-League that Harrison has, right? So they're pretty screwed, honestly. And, you know, I love Mike Conley. I think he's a great basketball player, but I'll believe that he's healthy in March and April when I see it. It's been 4 years since that was the case. Every single year, he is beat up and falling apart by the time the playoffs get around. And I really think that's when that depth is going to come into play, right? If you're in a tight division race and Mike Conley's foot doesn't work anymore and you got to start Wade Baldwin in like a division game against the Rockets, what are you going to do, right? I think Mike Conley's health is really the one factor that made me question the wisdom of signing him to a 5-year deal, honestly. I don't think they had any alternative to doing it. I understand why they did it. But I'll believe he's healthy all year long when it happens. I think that's a bigger story than Gasol and a bigger story than Parsons, because I think Gasol, there's no information, right? We're just going to have to see what happens. And Parsons, he wasn't on the team already, so they just haven't played with him yet. You know, it's not like we know how important he is to the team already. But Conley's health is everything to me.
I do think that we know, we can assume, we can reasonably infer that Chandler Parsons is pretty vital, because there's only one guy that can do what he can do. You know, that he can slide over, playmake at the three, and also be that stretch four potentially, which I think eventually as he gets older, that's kind of going to be his position. But he can play a shooting four that JaMychal Green is a limited player. If JaMychal Green is playing 20 or more minutes for your team, you are probably not going to be a very good team, as we saw last year. And that's no knock on JaMychal. That's just, he's 27 now. I mean, people think he's a young guy. He's not. And so I think it is what it is with him. Jarrell Martin, Deontay Davis, we'll see the upside there. But Chandler, for now, is a guy that can shift over on both of those potential units that we've discussed and play a significant role. He had an injury that was termed to be a 6-week injury back in March. It is now 6 months into it, and we still don't know. He's still limited going into camp. Everything is quote-unquote fine. He says it's on course, whatever. We've seen with this organization that is not always the greatest judge of how a player is and what fine actually means. Ask Jordan Adams, Brandon Wright, et cetera, Jarrell Martin's foot. So
Marcus Gasol's
foot. There you go. I mean, Mike Conley's Achilles, all these things. You can go up and down the list. Xavier Henry, you can talk to him about that whole thing and how that went. Is there reason for Grizzly fans to be worried, to be throwing up a little, not a red flag, but like a little, maybe an orangish kind of flag about Chandler Parsons?
I don't think yet. Let's get into the preseason. And if we get into the preseason, like with Jordan Adams last year, it's like, oh yeah, he'll be ready opening night. And then he doesn't play opening night. And then it's November and he hasn't played yet. And then you're into December and he's going to play next week. You know, I think let's get into the preseason and kind of see what they start saying then. I think they're not going to admit a timeline, because the second they blow it, it's going to be a PR disaster for them, like it was with Jordan Adams, like it was with Brandon Wright. They're probably never going to tell us anything about any injury ever again because of that. But, you know, I think if he makes it into preseason and still isn't, you know, still limited, is still not participating in 5-on-5, is still, I think if he gets to, they have 3 home games and then 3 road games, if he's not at least participating in drills by those road games, I'm worried.
It just has a lot of echoes of what we've seen in the past. I don't know that you have to, each situation is different, and it could be that it's just an absolute abundance of caution, but when you look at the history coupled with the fact that Dallas had the option really to bring him back. And I mean, if you listen to guys like Tim McMahon and others who cover that team pretty closely and know Dallas pretty well, it was almost as if Mark Cuban was like, I'm not going to sign you almost at any point. He wouldn't even, you know, have a discussion with Chandler about what would it take or what can I do or all that. If you couple those two things together, that's the part that's a little bit worrisome until you see him on the floor. And I see what you're saying. I think there's no reason to get prematurely irritated. It's just that with a, you'd think with 6 months to work on this thing, and you'd think with the plan and with the idea, and I don't know, man. There were some echoes of this, and as you look at the roster, and if you see what he brings potentially, why they signed him to the max contract, you take him out of the mix, and man, that puts a lot of pressure on James Ennis, most likely, I guess, or one of these young guys to shift up a little bit. I think it really, that's the part that makes me worry. Not so much, I mean, if it were any other team or any other history, there's just a lot of factors here. There's a lot of things that seem to be coalescing towards the conclusion that something's up.
Sure. I mean, I think that's a reasonable position. I think I'm just kind of taking more of a wait and see stance on it. Just because, Tim McMahon was definitely on top of the situation in Dallas. So if he heard 6 weeks, then I believe that 6 weeks was the number, but at the same time, from what Parsons was saying today, I think he kind of got scared after he went through this rehab process before and then still had issues. He didn't say that he feels like he rushed back, but he did say that he was worried about rushing back and that he's definitely, he's doing everything in his power not to. So, he might just be, and the trainers might just be being overcautious. We really don't know. I certainly don't think that's the case, right? I think he's just not ready yet. Worst case scenario, right? Let's talk this out. Worst case scenario, he doesn't play all year. They give up a high lottery pick to the Nuggets. And, they've got their draft picks back by the time Chandler Parsons is off contract. So, you know what I mean? We don't know right now. It could go, they could win 30 games this year because everybody's hurt. They could win 20 games this year because everybody's hurt. If everybody comes back the way they're wanting to come back, they could be number four in the West, right? I think this is kind of, I've talked about this in my pre-media day piece that went up today, but I don't remember another season that has been this wide open since they signed Zach Randolph, right? Are they going to make the playoffs? Are they going to be terrible? Is he going to be able to be on an NBA team without getting arrested or whatever, getting sent packing after 3 months? Are they going to make the playoffs? Are they going to win 15 games, right? This is that exactly mirrors this situation to me. It's kind of a fresh start. A lot of the faces are the same. A lot of things have changed organizationally. I think the coaching change has a lot to do with it. There's a lot of question marks around this year, and he's just one of them, right? We don't know.
That is the name of the preview, I think, is we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know. None of this grit grind or we don't bluff. Yeah. We don't know. And I think that would be on the growl towel. If I'm making growl towels for the preseason.
Just a question mark.
Just a big question mark and a we don't know on one side. I think we're good. So your ultimate prediction, you said 44 to 48. We got a ton of stuff to get to, and hopefully we can have you back on to later on in the preseason once we know a few more things and see some on-court action. But right now, are you putting an actual number, or are you going to stick with this rangy thing that you got going?
That's just a range. That's my range if everybody stays healthy. I think they'll be fourth. I think they can be fourth or fifth in the West if they're healthy.
They can be fourth or fifth in the West if they're healthy.
That's your Chris Wallace. That's your Chris Wallace answer.
The confidence is oozing out of Kevin Leib. You can see it. Well, I can. You can. But I can see it. It's happening. Again, follow Kevin on Twitter at FlyerGrizzBlog. I appreciate Kevin taking the time to join me here on Locked On Grizzlies and the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you guys for downloading it. Be sure to subscribe in all of your various feeds, your iTunes, reviews, 5 stars, all that stuff is great. We love feedback. You can hit me up on Twitter. I am at Peter Edmondson. I'd love to hear from you. Send me questions, comments. I will get you on the podcast. I love hearing from you guys. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Until next time, see ya.
Locked On Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.